How is it possible for a person to rejoice at the thought that God is coming to judge the earth? Welcome to The Good Word. We continue our series on glimpses of our God, and our topic for today is the God of grace and judgment. My conversation partners are two members of the Walla Walla School of Theology again, Walla Walla University School of Theology, Stravko Stefanovic and Paul Dibdahl. Let's go to that question. How would you say it's possible to rejoice at the possibility of God coming to judge the earth? Grace? Yeah, that's wonderful. But judgment?
I don't know how common the term to judge or judgment is in today's world, and that is why I think it would be useful to explain that concept in the Bible. That means God is not indifferent to what's going on this earth, but he promises to act, and indeed we can see around us different signs that he is at work, that he's acting. And therefore, when there is a weak person, because unfortunately on this earth there is so much suffering, injustice, and so on, God steps in to punish the oppressor and to rescue the oppressed. And to that oppressed being, this is a welcome news. The old picture suggested by Professor Edmund Jacob, famous Old Testament theologian, I like it. He says that typically we think of justice as blindfolded lady holding a balance in her hand. And he says the more biblical picture would be a strong person standing with one hand pushing away the oppressor and with the other helping the victim kind of stay ground and survive the problem and so on. So that is the biblical concept of justice.
Yeah. I think in terms of American jargon, we would say he's not so much the judge that we picture, you know, on his weighing here the evidence is some kind of impartial way. But he's more like the prosecuting attorney. Somebody has registered a complaint, and so it's his job to go out and get the culprit, see? Mm-hmm. And probably the book of Judges, we think, you know, if you look at the men who are described as judges, they don't fit our understanding of this, you know, the hourglass, you know, or measuring things out with balances and so on.
The judge steps into the midst of the fray and is not behind a large desk in a fancy robe or wig even, but involved in the very business of setting things right. And I think we all have this sense of justice. We want justice to be done. And when we look around in the world, we see that justice is not always done.
Yeah.
And the looking ahead to a day when wrongs are made right and oppression is stopped, that is a glorious and a great day.
And the picture from Genesis 18 is almost incredible when we read it, where God basically says this cry of injustice from the five cities of the plain has come to me, and I'm down on my way to check it out, to see it with my own eyes, basically. I'm interpreting a little. And then God says, once I have all the facts, then I will know what to do.
Yeah,
It's a very powerful picture that I can trust. He will not judge by rumors. Uh-huh. No, he will take all the facts into consideration in order to help the weak.
I worked for a year in the middle of my college experience. I worked for a year as a volunteer for Adventist Development and Relief Agency, and I worked in a refugee camp in Thailand. Tens of thousands of people in the camp where I was at that had fled political oppression. I mean, they had family members that had been hauled off in the dead of night and never to be seen again. All kinds of horrible things that had led them to flee their countries and end up being held there in Thailand. Talk about judgment with that group. That was you didn't have to try to explain something. They wanted judgment. They wanted God to step in and make things right again. It wasn't a day they were afraid of, but a day they longed for.
Yeah. And they wanted a strong God.
You want a strong God. Absolutely. Absolutely. A powerful God.
There's a cluster of at least three psalms, Psalm 96, mm-hmm. 97, 98, that finishes, come, because mm-hmm. the Lord mm-hmm. is coming to judge the earth, or he's going to mm-hmm. beat up on those evil guys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and the book of Revelation, mm-hmm. souls crying out, how long, how right. much longer do we have to wait until the judgment
comes? Now, last summer, I was with some students in the Philippines, and we were encouraged to tell a story, and the details, please don't hold me accountable for them, but this is like the structure of the story in a few sentences. It was at a time when the mayor of New York was LaGuardia, after whom the airport is named, LaGuardia, and apparently he was also a professional judge. And one evening, after he finished all his work, he was passing by the court. Times were very difficult economically. And when he came in, he volunteered to help the judges who at that point of the day, that time of the day, they were very exhausted. And the first person who showed up was a mother who stole a few loaves of bread, maybe a couple of loaves of bread, and there was a baker there. Accusing her. And LaGuardia heard the case, and he said, well, then this is going to be the fine. This is going to be the punishment for the lady. And the lady said, but I had nothing to eat, and she was really weak and shaking, and my children really needed food and so on. And then LaGuardia took that amount, let's say $300, something like that, and he said, all right, this is going to be the fine, and he paid for it. And then he turned to the person sitting next to him who had a hat on his head, and he sent that hat around, and they collected money for the lady so that she could have money for food for the coming days. And he said, it is a crime to steal, but it's also a crime in this land to have people who have nothing to eat. So, interesting stories that show us how, to combine the two concepts.
Yeah, yeah. Now, as I look at judgment in Scripture, I think there are at least three dominant roles, and I'd like for us to toss those around. We've already talked about the abused plaintiff who comes in, and I think that, while people will say that God had a short fuse for the flood and destruction of Sodom, those two, if you look at the story of the flood in Scripture, the world was filled with violence. Mm-hmm. It was not a good place.
It says every inclination of the mm-hmm. thoughts of human hearts was only evil all the time.
It's so sad to read that passage, God's heart just
and
broken.
God's heart broken. Yeah. Yeah. Grieved. That yeah. he had...
And so you have those cases, and I'm convinced that when you have people on the loose, the Lord will let them go for a while, but there mm-hmm. has to be a point where he says, I must intervene for the sake of the rest. The book of Judges, again, is a classic example of where these are coming to deliver. And it's interesting when you look in the book of Judges that in every case except once, the judges not only deliver the Israelites, but they deliver their fellow Canaanites that were surrounding mm-hmm. them. Mm-hmm. So it's really fascinating to see how that works in Scripture, and that we referred to Psalms 96 and 98. So that's the abused plaintiff. And if we look carefully at our world, that's certainly one role. But now let's look at one where probably most evangelical Christians think that we stand in court as the accused culprit. Mm-hmm. To what extent should this dominate our thinking in our world today? Or is it just the danger as I see it, if you emphasize that too much and then Jesus pays the price, you get to go off scot-free. And you don't then take responsibility for what you have done to abuse the world because the price has been paid. Now you can go free.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the danger I see of that. Mm-hmm. But can we talk about that just a bit further, about how we feel when we come into court before God as the accused culprit? Is that the way most Christians would feel themselves in judgment?
I couldn't answer for Christians all around the world, but I do think that in North American society, North American culture, that when you talk about judgment, coming before before the judgment seat. I think that's precisely what most people, the image that comes to mind. I am a bad person, and boy, how am I going to be able to make it through this? Because God's probably very, very angry at me, and I may just be consumed even. I think that's the image that comes to mind.
Yeah. And I think in America, at least, if you go to the door and there's a policeman there, that's really scary. Somebody died, or did I do something wrong?
Right.
See, the one place in my experience where I saw that positively in America was when I had an old Buick, and my colleague Doug Clark was coming. We were coming back late from Portland, and we were having problems with the beast, and it died halfway between Boardman and Pendleton at 3 o'clock in the morning. So my colleague Doug Clark hitched a ride on a triple trailer because he had his pickup at the Pendleton Airport, those of you who know the geography there, and we were in the middle of nowhere, just my wife and I. And when the police came up behind us with the light on, that was one of the most welcome sights that we could have, because at that point we knew we could be in trouble. But now the defender of justice was there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's go to the other one. By the way, Doug would never ride in that car again.
It still amazes me how in the Bible there are several key terms that are used, especially in the Old Testament, that put the two concepts together, justice and grace. We have the term chesed, loving kindness, but at the same time, conformity to God's will, and also like tzedek, and so on, where it's really difficult to translate whether it's righteousness or mercy, depending on the context. But it's still in the Bible, there are terms that somehow blend the two together.
See, in English, again, the word righteousness and holiness, and we're going to talk about holiness next week, those have kind of a standoffish quality. Mm-hmm. So when I talk about righteousness, tzedek, for example, I like to think of the quality of doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's much more helpful. Now, the other word that I'd like to just mention here quickly, in the light of all that God has done for us, if we are the plaintiff or that we are the accused, then we can come to court as the witness for God.
Mm-hmm.
And if you men were in trouble, that's one case where I would be absolutely delighted to go if I could speak a word on your behalf. And I think there is a sense in Scripture that once we move beyond the plaintiff or the accused, then we can stand in court as witness for God. And I think that is really a very wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, judgment and grace, we always experience those two together. And sometimes, as you mentioned, Paul, sometimes I need one, sometimes I need the other.
Mm-hmm.
And the variety of experiences in the Scripture are very important for us. All right, next week we will turn to the holiness of God, and my conversations will be the same two men who've been helping us all the way along. My thanks to Chad Ofterhauer, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For The Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
Listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.